This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. About 26 journalists have been reported missing in Iraq, and it is believed they are being held prisoner. One of them, Neil Conan, is our colleague at NPR. He was traveling on the way to Basra with New York Times reporter Chris Hedges. Also reported missing are two journalists from CNN, Greg LaMotte and Tyrone Edwards. Most of the missing journalists are French. Bill Buesenberg is NPR's vice president for news and information programs. He told me what he knows about what happened to the journalists and who might be holding them.
There's a lot of conflicting information, so I can't say that we know absolutely everything for sure. But the best information we have, which comes from other journalists in the area, was that this is Neil Conan and a reporter, Chris Hedges of the New York Times, drove in a white Land Rover with other cars up toward Basra Monday morning, leaving about 8 o'clock from Kuwait City there. We believe they were stopped at a checkpoint and that they were taken into custody in some way by the Republican guards in that area outside of Basra. We think they may be held together with all the other journalists who are also missing, some 26 or 27, most of which are French, about 15 are French. We think they're all being held together in a barracks in Basra. That comes from a couple of different people, but I think it's not hard and certainly not confirmed, and we can't make sure that's absolutely certain, but that's the best information we have now.
What kind of work is being done behind the scenes now to try to figure out for sure who's holding them and what could be done to get their release?
Well, we're doing everything we can, and I mean everything. We're talking, obviously, to all parts of the U.S. government, the National Security Council and the State Department and the Pentagon and the Central Command in Riyadh and Capitol Hill. A number of congressional leaders have made calls on our behalf, so we have a lot we're doing in Washington and in Saudi Arabia. We're also calling foreign embassies and talking with Iraqi government officials at the United Nations and embassies in Europe. We're also working, I think one of the main things is working with other journalist organizations who are involved, CNN and the New York Times, for example. CNN has already taken, through their reporter in Baghdad, Peter Arnett, has taken all of these names of these journalists to the Iraqi government in Baghdad and asked that they be released there, so they are well aware of it at that level. We're working. The other organizations we've called and have been asked for their help include the International Red Cross, Amnesty International, the United Nations. We are doing literally everything we can and talking to everyone we can think of to help in this case and see if we can get them released.
CBS just went through this with four of their journalists. And after, I think it was 42 days, the journalists were released. There's a lot of behind-the-scenes work, and I know the Soviets were supposed to have been very influential in that. Is there anything that could be extrapolated from the CBS experience that you think could help you now?
Well, that's what we're doing. We, in fact, talked to CBS, and their advice was be optimistic, and it may be a long term. They did send someone to Baghdad, and they worked in Baghdad the whole time. We're quite willing to do that if we can get a visa to get in to help there. We did talk to the Soviets. Our reporter in Moscow, Ann Cooper, has been in contact with both the foreign ministry and the president's office as well, which CBS recommended. The recommendation from CBS was basically to make this as visible as possible, not to just let it go away and not to just assume it will take care of itself, but in fact to talk to people, go public, keep this issue alive, and that will have a better chance than just sitting by and waiting for something to happen. So we have, I think, tried to take CBS's advice and do that with the other journalistic organizations that are involved.
Can we go back a little bit? How did you realize that there was something wrong? What kind of arrangements do you have with Neil, for instance, when he goes out when he goes out to report something and there's danger involved?
Well, first of all of the reporters are clearly told, because I told them before they left, that, you know, the most important thing is to come back, not the story. The story comes second. So we hope that they don't put themselves in a situation of great risk if they can possibly avoid it, that the story definitely comes second. So we assume that Neil was operating under those instructions and was unaware that something would happen or it would be held at all. We are in contact with him twice a day because he's filing twice a day and has since he went to the Gulf originally. But in Kuwait City, he was filing, and he filed Sunday morning, and he filed again Sunday evening, and had planned this was to be a one-day trip up to the Basra area to see if he could find out what was going on. He was to be back by Monday night and be in touch with us, and we assume file a story for Monday evenings, all things considered. When he did not come back last night and we did not get in touch with him, we certainly began to worry and started the process. But at that time, it was, you know, an overdue reporter. And we know how difficult it is to get phones, especially international phones, and to get in contact. It's not so easy. So, you know, a few hours delay sometimes, even missing one cycle of the news program, is understandable in the circumstances. But it was really by this morning, when we still had not heard from him, then it becomes a much different matter. And when we see how many other journalists are in a similar situation, 26, 27 journalists is a lot. So we know that something has happened, and that's when we really started moving on this.
Did it seem safe to you to be driving into Iraq now? Did you have any sense of the situation?
Well, we know there's a chaotic situation in the Basra area, and if it were up to me to say go or no go, I would certainly not have recommended that Neil go right now to do that. He's using his own information there and with other reporters, and I think probably from a journalistic side made a good decision that they thought they could go and get as close as they could to see what was happening. That's a decision that you have to make in the field, and you can't make every day back here in Washington for a reporter. We just simply don't have all the information to know what went into it, what the decision was, and how it was made, and what they were operating under. So there's a lot of things we need to find out about, and I hope we will.
Is the American military willing to work with you on this, and are they working with you?
We believe they are. We certainly have been in contact with Pete Williams at the Pentagon starting last night through the night, and again this morning a number of times. The Pentagon says very clearly that the ceasefire agreement that they have with Iraq says that all foreign nationals who have been detained are to be released. Those detained before the ceasefire and presumably those detained since the ceasefire. So we think it's clear the agreement that the military has with the Iraqi government and Iraqi military officials is that these people should be released. So we're operating under the assumption that the Pentagon and the military in Saudi Arabia is operating under that same assumption, that these people should be released, and they are working for that. The problem is the military does not control that area. The American checkpoint was the last point where American military control really ended, and then it was into Iraqi control. And given the ceasefire, they cannot really change that on the ground right now. Our issue here is not with the U.S. military, certainly it's with the Iraqi government and clearly the Iraqi military, specifically, we believe, the Republican Guards.
Are the American military pool still in effect, and is that influencing at all the kind of response you're getting from the American military?
The pool system has really fallen by the wayside since the end of the war, and clearly it was not operating in this case at all. Reporters have been going on their own and doing their own things, and there are still some pools, and there are still some escorts and military escorts and that sort of thing, but that was not operating in this case at all, and really has not been operating in Kuwait City to a very great extent. Neil was doing some things on a pool there, but many more things. Deborah Amos, our other reporter, is also in Kuwait City, and they're operating much, much on their own, finding out things, talking to Kuwaitis, and doing their own reporting and filing their own reporting. And we haven't been saying on our air that this was reviewed by the military or anything like that, because they are operating outside any kind of controlled pool system.
Have you ever been in this position before, Bill?
No, I haven't. It's funny because we've worked very hard here to cover this war and the leading up to the war and the aftermath of the war. There's been, you know, around-the-clock work by lots and lots of people through this whole period. And when the war itself ended, the fighting ended, I felt great relief because we had seven of our own people out in that area in Iraq. Scott Simon clearly was in Iraq and with the military and other people at different points, and I was very worried. I've never sent someone to do that sort of thing, and it was a great concern of mine. When the war ended, I thought, great, we did it. We covered it, and everybody's fine, and I felt great relief. And obviously, I just happened to write on our our daily critique yesterday that covering the piece can be even harder, and it's turning out to be.
You know, it's funny. Neil Conan was one of the people who really designed the NPR war coverage.
As the managing editor in the long lead up to the war, he clearly was the key person putting together NPR's war coverage planning and contingency planning. So he had a great hand in it, and from his own point of view, very much wanted to be involved in the coverage directly. He's a great military analyst.
Yeah, but he was probably one of the people most concerned about the safety of the reporters who he was helping to send out.
Yep.
What kind of leverage does the United States have now with the ceasefire already in effect?
Well, I think we control a great deal of the country. It's probably the best leverage. We also control many, many thousands of POWs. Certainly, I would think the United States government would be in a position to put a lot of pressure on for any number of things. We want them to focus on this issue and this one, and so far as we know, they are, and we think that's good.
Well, we all hope that we hear good news very soon. And, Bill, thank you very much for your time.
Okay, thank you.
Bill Buesenberg is NPR's Vice President for News and Information Programs. This is Fresh Air.